Bonnie Gani, everyone. This is Professor Harmon Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach. Former city councilman for the city of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees. We want to welcome you to the Conscious Corner, a place where we talk about actual facts, as Khalid Muhammad used to say, about blacks. And we deal with our constant and continuous struggle to bring justice into the world and to liberate our minds and see the world from an Afrocentric perspective, meaning using our own culture as a resource, not just a reference. And so we want to welcome our special guest. Before I get to our special guest, I want to let you know the panel, and that's Brother Ernest McBride. Ernest McBride is the archivist and historian of his father's contributions to the liberation and political consciousness of the city of Long Beach, starting the first NAACP and Optima Club, and responsible for the forward progress of Black people in the city of Long Beach. Ernest himself, by right, shared in that venture with his father, along with family members, mom, and all. And they're a legend. They make and they as, a, as they were rightfully rewarded for honoring his father with a recreational center named after him, a school named after him, and plenty of other accolades and appreciation for his contribution to the liberation of our people. And then at the same time, we have Dr. Rose Allen, Rosemary Allen, who was a longtime struggler, helped build the Black Conscious Movement at Long Beach and was one of the founders of the Black Consciousness Conference, as well as a president of the Black Studies Student Association, as well as the and help with the Sisterhoods of Revolution, and well as you're going on to become a doctor, a PhD, earning her PhD, and she's the mother of our guest, Brother Kamal Allen. And words cannot express appreciation, love and admiration I have for the Allen family, along with Don and what Rose is doing in Denver as far as her nonprofit, dealing with the disciplining of Black children specifically. And she's just a continuous worker for the betterment of our people. And we have another special guest. I can't see her name. Who was that, Rose? The sister. You on mute, Rose. You on mute.
That is Meja Thomas Johnson. She's also a CSULB alum.
Is that right? Mia? All right,
And
Sister.
Crystal Jackson's on.
Is Crystal?
And Kamal's grandma, we call her Nani, but that's Lananda Robinson. She's
Okay.
on.
All right, that's beautiful. And we want to welcome each and every one of y'all because we have a spectacular presentation today. This young man I met when he was very young, and he went on to get his law degree and practicing law in Wisconsin. And he pretty soon will be practicing law all over the United States. But he's not just practicing criminal law or just using his law degree to file suits and jump on and try to encourage people to call him to file suits and accident. This brother's been in the struggle as a young man for a long time, going to various demonstrations. He went to Chicago to demonstrate against ICE and many of the challenges in Denver. Denver is a place in which we need young people to step up, and he has stepped up. He's a merit. He is admired by many people all over the country and young people. He's organized wherever he went. He's organized various organizations, and they made a major contribution. But the big thing is that he's the future of our struggle. He's the future. We want young people like this brother, to continue what he's doing. He's a model of excellence, Black youth excellence, and we deeply appreciate all that Kamal has done in seeking justice and bringing the issues to the forefront of our struggle that has changed immensely. And we need educated people to be able to articulate it and be able to explain it and be able to organize other young people. So without further delay, he's going to talk about prison and servitude, but he's going to also talk about his journey and the other issues that he thinks should be woven into his discussion tonight. And when I asked him to come on, it was no problem for him to be a guest speaker. And that is attorney Kamal Allen. Go ahead, brother. And you can tell us more about yourself and then get into your presentation.
Absolutely. Dr. Ra, I have to thank you so much, not only just for that very warm and loving introduction, but also just for having me on this amazing platform that you've been building. That this is exactly what we need at a time like this, and to be on this Zoom call, to be on this panel with essentially my community. People who have raised me and known me since I was a little boy, yourself included, that it's just an incredible honor to be able to do you all proud, and to walk into the walk in the footsteps that you have demonstrated for me when I was a child. My story into what I like to call change making. Which embodies a lot. It embodies a full range of activism, legal change, such as legislative change, change in the courtroom now that I have a law degree, change in how we think about things through our culture, our language, our community. Any form of change that really pushes us closer to liberation collectively and closer to justice. That story began when I was a little kid. And it began with how my parents, like my mom, Dr. Rosemary Allen, my father, Don Allen, and other members of our community, taught me about their stories. They taught me about how to think about the world in which we're living in through an Afrocentric lens, and how to look at our story of resilience and injustice from the moment that we were enslaved from various parts of West and Central Africa across the Atlantic into the antebellum South and survived the United States of America up until this moment. They told me stories about where our ancestors came from in various parts of Shreveport, Louisiana, various parts of various parts of other southern cities and very small towns. They told me stories about how some of our ancestors and elders had to flee racial terror from the South in and make a home for themselves in California. They told me stories about how this system has deeply impacted our family and how it continues to do so. And by getting this lens, it helps instruct the way that I think about my politics today. When I was t about 20 years old, I was going to Howard University at the time, and it was one of the first moments that I decided to put my politics to test. That this was actually in November of 2014, a few months after Michael Brown Jr. was shot and killed by the Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. And for those who don't remember, speaking to our audience out there, that was a flashpoint in our history as a community. That it represented a moment in which we began revisiting a very old fight that began the moment that our ancestors landed here in this country through the slave ships. But it was a fight that has been carried, especially more recently, through the civil rights struggle, the Black Power movement, and was revisited once again through the streets of Ferguson when Michael Brown's body was left in the streets for 4.5 hours. I remember being huddled around this laptop with my college friends, and we're watching the prosecutor give this very long-winded speech, and he was talking about all these really big ideals about that we don't see color, we believe everybody has an equal opportunity, and giving a lot of lip service to the idea of justice. But at the end of that speech, he said the grand jury found no reason to indict Officer Darren Wilson of any crime for shooting and killing Michael Brown Jr. People started uprising again in Ferguson. And I went upstairs, I started packing my bags. My girlfriend at the time asked me, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to St. Louis." She said, "How are you getting there?" I said, "I don't know." "What you gonna do when you get there?" "I don't know." "Well, where are you gonna stay?" I said, "I'll sleep on the sidewalk if I have to, but I'm going." It was this pull that I couldn't describe other than a call, which I believe a call from God, a call from our ancestors to join this fight. That all my life I was raised to see how my parents, how my elders have fought for our ability to exist in this country, and that I felt the need to join that fight. And so, but the only problem was I didn't know how to get to St. Louis. I didn't know anybody in St. Louis. And so I contacted my pastor, who had lived in that city for a number of years. And I said, "Pastor Tyler, I'm not taking no for an answer. I need to know who you know that lives in St. Louis because I'm going. You can't stop me. I'm going." He said, "Slow down, son. Why are you going to a city you have never been to, in a neighborhood you never heard of, to fight for a young man you never knew, when you could be doing good work in DC or in Denver?" And I thought about it, and I had to really think about what exactly is my relationship to a city like Ferguson? What exactly is my relationship to what's going on in that struggle? And I thought about myself. I thought about the interactions that I've had with the police. I've thought about the interactions my family members have had with the police. And I said to him, "I'm going not because I knew Mike Brown, but because I could have been him. And so many people, myself included, so many people that I know could still be Mike." And he said, "That's very compelling. But my second question is, does your mom know about it yet?" I said, "No. And I don't want to go till I have all my arrangements in order." He said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I'll get you connected with somebody who's taking a team of people from Denver to Ferguson, but you got to tell your mom. We got to talk about it." And what I didn't appreciate then was how the community was uplifting me for this moment. That I was able to lean in on my pastor and to lean into this community network that was building. But I was so nervous to talk to my mom about going, because at that time, the imagery that was coming out of this very small city was very violent. That you had, including my fellow students at Howard, getting brutalized by Ferguson PD and state troopers. You saw a heavy National Guard presence. You saw the heavy militarization of law enforcement in this Black community. And I told my mom, I want to go to St. Louis. And there was a very long pause on the phone. And I didn't know what she was going to say. But she said, "Son, I'm so proud of you. And I want to make sure that you go, but you got to be safe." And so that's how I felt that courage to not only understand and absorb the knowledge and the information that my parents had instilled within me, but now it was my turn to try to be a soldier for justice on that front line. And so that's how I know it was, a longer story, but I'm that's I every time I tell that story, I have to tell it from beginning to end. And I'm so thankful for every moment that I've had that led me to where I am now. And so
Well,
what, oh, sorry.
we hear you.
So, going from there, I was able to graduate from Howard University, and at the time I had gotten involved in some areas of the protest movement. I was able to go to Ferguson, and I was able to go to other major sites of civil uprisings, including Baltimore later that year in 2015. But it wasn't until after I graduated from undergrad at Howard that I really began working as a community organizer. I joined an organization out here in Colorado called Together Colorado, and I was hired as a professional organizer, which I didn't know at the time that you could actually be hired as an organizer. I thought I had to do all of this for free. But it was through Together Colorado that I was able to join one of the biggest opportunities of my young career. Back in 2016, the state of Colorado attempted but failed to pass a ballot measure to abolish slavery and involuntary servitude as punishment for a crime. And for a lot of people who don't know, slavery and involuntary servitude is, in fact, legal in the United States so long as you have been convicted of a crime. It's language that is still within the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution, and it's language that is within various different states, including the state of California, and up until 2018, the state of Colorado. In 2018, I had the ability and the blessing to manage the steering committee for the abolition campaign that eventually made Colorado the first state in the union to abolish slavery and involuntary servitude from our state constitution. At the time, we kind of knew that we were the first state to do it, but we weren't sure what impact this was going to have. We weren't sure, what this means in terms of prison labor at the time. We didn't know whether other states would follow suit. But slowly but surely, we started getting calls from various organizers and legislators from different states. And some of them had expressed to me that they wanted to get a campaign going. Some of them already had a campaign going. And so by 2020, we were able to connect ourselves as a national network of several different state campaigns who wanted to replicate the victory that we had in the state of Colorado. And so because of that, we are now the Abolish Slavery National Network. You could definitely check us out. We have succeeded in states such as Utah, Nebraska, Vermont, Tennessee, Alabama, Oregon, and I'm forgetting another one. But we started seeing this movement across the nation of what I would call now the second the second largest abolition campaign as it relates to the language of slavery. And so and all across the board we started seeing more and more about how this is, hey, there we are. Yeah. The Abolish Slavery National Network. We started seeing more and more how the link between the language of slavery in the Constitution, the practice of slavery from the antebellum period, the chattel slavery, to how all of that manifests itself today within our prison system. The first question that people ask us is, does slavery still exist? And the first answer that I have is yes, it exists, especially in the Constitution, but it also exists in practice. Courts that hear a lot of inmates' complaints about prison labor are very clear that when you are convicted of a crime, you no longer have a 13th Amendment protection, meaning that you no longer have the ability to refuse labor. You may be forced to work any type of labor for how long, however long the Department of Corrections decides. You may be punished for refusing to do so, and you could be put into labor situations with no protections, very little recourse, and of course, very little money. This is our wonderful team. Ever since I joined, ever since I was enrolled at UW-Madison's Law School, I've stepped down as a lead organizer, and I'm now an emeritus member of our illustrious team. And so, I'm very thankful for this team of people. We have been, these are individuals who have been on the front lines, including those who are not pictured here. For example, we have organizers in Louisiana who have actually served, I believe it was about 27 years, at the Angola prison facility. We've had individuals whose husbands and wives are were and are currently serving time. And they bring their stories to the forefront. They let us know what the conditions of their labor is like. They let us know
Calculated.
these horrific stories about how slavery is being practiced today. So I'm forever thankful for this team.
Agenda, go forward. Go forward.
Professor Ra,
Yes.
he's finished with that part.
Okay. Well, anybody have any questions? We'll start with Brother Ernest. Do you have any questions?
No, only that I'm proud that your parents are right in being proud of, because I don't even, I just
My
met you, and I'm
questions. I
proud
know
of.
where you come from. I know you.
And I just want to, because I had a friend of Brian Woodward who went to Howard. I wonder if you knew Brian. Whenever I hear Howard University, then my mind goes, well, I knew Brian Woodward, and he ran track there, and he graduated from there, and he's probably about your age. I think he's in his 40s, maybe now, late 30s, early 40s, so.
I haven't had the pleasure of knowing him, but I hope that my path crosses with his, though.
Okay. Crystal Jackson. Crystal, are you there?
Yes.
Well,
Hold
Crystal.
on. Let me see. Hold on. I'm trying to. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was trying to unmute my mic. I am here. I'm driving, which is why you guys can't see me. I'm actually on my way to vote. I haven't voted yet.
Okay.
And I'm on my way to vote, but I am so happy that you contact you. You always text me. I'm just glad I got this particular one and that I was able to be on. And Clarence, you know, I am beyond proud of you. And while you were speaking, I was just thinking in my head about some of the young people that I've met, what their focuses are right now. You are definitely rare. And I wonder, when you encounter young people of your generation and you share what your passion is and what you're working on, what is their conversation? Are they excited? Are they interested in wanting to be a part of? I'm just curious what their conversation is with you and what you share to, maybe entice some people to join you or to just care.
I really appreciate you. Of course, I absolutely love you, and I love that question. When I talk to other folks from my generation, we have this moment where we are holding two complicated emotions at once. The first is actually sadness, and fear, because of when as my generation grew up, we grew up under the victories of that our ancestors and our elders were able to achieve, the massive change in America through the civil rights struggle, the Black Power movement. And I expressed sadness because we, having grown up under, having witnessed and experienced the fruits of that victory, and we see so much of it being taken away, or so much of it having been eroded, that by the time that we become adults, we're in a position where we have to fight yet again. That so many promises from our society have been made and broken, that the sadness and fear that my generation is feeling is very tangible. But we're also very hopeful that, because we've seen what our elders have been able to do, we know we could do. And we know that because our elders have gone through worse than what we've than what we're going through, we know that we can climb this mountain too. And the message that I try to express with folks my age is that we not only have a responsibility to make it, but that we are as beautiful and as capable as we've ever been. That we're in a situation now where if we pull our power together, we might be able to do something incredible. And I saw that. I saw that while I was in Ferguson. I saw that in the abolition campaigns. I saw that in law school. That there are young people who are viewing the world so critically right now. And that we understand, and the both the terrifying and the empowering realization is that the future is up to us. It's up to the work that we put in now. It's up to the vision for the world that we put in now. And so we're seeing some true visionaries out there who, despite the ICE raids, despite the white nationalists, despite the takeovers of the Capitol, despite the officers continuing to shoot down unarmed Black people again and again and again, despite everything that we're seeing people push back in all these incredible ways. And I'm so proud of the people that I've been able to talk to about all this.
No, Fareed, were you talking earlier? Thank you so much for that, Clarence. Fareed, if you're talking, you're muted.
Okay. And another thing about Crystal Jackson, don't she's first of all Dr. Allen's good friend, a very precious friend. She travels constantly to Colorado, sometimes just to get a break, but also to see Dr. Allen as well as her family. And she's, but above all, she has a history. She's one of the major contributors to the Black Conscious Movement at Long Beach State also. And Crystal worked with Willie Brown's office, and who was at that time the Speaker of the California State of House, House,
Right.
and Crystal has a legacy in Bakersfield, her family, the Jackson family, of their roles in lifting the spirit of the community. And she's took by her father while he was going through dialysis. And she just and stuck with her sister while she was going through cancer. And she's just a very caring and emotionally attached to loving her family and the people. And I have so much respect for Crystal. And she's a great vocalist also.
Yeah.
So we love, and I've been trying to get to do a duet with her, but that's another story for another day. But we'll get into that. I think Miss Joan Johnson, is that me, Mimi? Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, me. You're on.
Hi, it's Meredith Thomas Johnson, and I too am good friends with Crystal and Rose. And I am coincidentally an alumni of Long Beach,
Okay.
the social work program.
Okay.
But so I'm here to support and hear nephew over here do his thing. So we're all so proud of him. So I don't have much to join other than to listen and take notes. I have my daughter who's studying. I told her to listen in because she's so passionate about this topic, and she's giving me an earful in text. But but it's always nice to support our just to support and hear and find out what's going on, because we are older and we see it from a different lens. So it's nice to hear a different perspective. And really what's going on in the community. So thank you for having me a part of this podcast.
Okay.
Rachel, do you think Randy has any questions?
I
What
have a
might?
question. LA.
Oh,
It's
there's
pretty.
Fareed. Okay.
Yeah, I had to figure this thing out. Sorry, guys, I'm not feeling as well, so I won't stay on long. I just got three quick points. And Kamal, first off, kudos to you for taking the path that you took. And I understand that largely because having gone to school with your mom, Dr. Allen, or for me and the rest of my colleagues, Sister Rose, we understand you come from good pedigree, and we understand if you put good things in a child, good things will come out of a child as they grow. So I appreciate you in a big way for being who you are and what you're doing, the endeavors and the path that you've taken. There's many beneficiaries that's going to receive, the positives from the things that you do now. Plant those seeds with relationships, plant those seeds with people that are important to your next step, that are important to our next step, and continue to grow those relationships and all that you're about. So my question is this. You've explained with Crystal's questions, I want to dovetail on that a bit, the type of messaging you render to people in your age bracket, your age group. And that's good. Those are the kind of messages they need to hear, messages that can become valuable and beneficial to them. My question to you is, how are you getting the responses and your messages up to the people that can make a substantive difference? What are we doing when we get feedback? What are we doing when we have an action plan? Where are you going with it that's giving us results so you can see that you're on the right path? Continue to affirm that what you're doing makes sense and it's not just bluster. I'm not challenging you with that. I'm just questioning it just to see what's the next step? What are you doing with it?
No, I really appreciate that, and that is a very pivotal question when we talk about organizing, because all attempts to organize are attempts to build power, and when you build power, you have to communicate what the intent of that power is. You have to have people come with you in order to be powerful,
Exactly.
And
You're
so
definitely.
one of the I believe that there are a couple of ways to think about this. There's the messages that we put out to broad audiences, especially through campaign structures, is what I'm most familiar with. And
Okay.
these are, of course, when we're part of long sustained campaigns and whatnot, we have, we have methods of reaching out through what I would just call kind of shallow means, which is, like the social media posts, the videos, the building up narrative through in content, where we are able to synthesize the world in a way that is both true and impactful. But what I'm more familiar with is the more the deeper forms of communication that require some type of relationship. That as an organizer, one of the ways that we
Yes.
really pushed this issue over the line in 2018 as opposed to 2016, we didn't focus as much on how many people we could reach, although that was a part of the campaign itself. But we thought to ourselves, how deeply can we reach people? And the challenge that we really trained on was building up the networks of people that are closest to us when it comes to this work. And by closest to us, of course, that could mean like family, friends, et cetera. But it could also mean people that we know that we organize with who are just within the community, people who are doing, X, Y, and Z things. And to really start building your own personal like power coalition, right? People that are willing to roll up their sleeves with you, which ain't gonna be everybody, unfortunately, But what we were able to find is that if I'm able to build a power coalition, for example, of 10 people, and if everybody on this call was able to build a power coalition of 10 people, what started out as 11 people, for example, has now gone over 100, 110 people. And by doing that type of intimate organizing math, like we found that that power coalition was able to help us not only push messaging out to a broader audience, right? Because I could only tweet so much. I could only reach so many people through certain through so many platforms. But through these individual coalitions, we were able to find that we were able to spread the work out more, that we were able to scheme and collaborate more, and that we became more of a viable threat to the established order of how involuntary servitude and slavery existed in the Constitution at that time. And what we found was it was almost like a wave had boiled over, had just kind of swept through, because other people's personal coalitions were capable of things that we couldn't even think about. Like we had an individual who was deeply connected with some of the religious communities in Denver, particularly in the Catholic Church, and that led to the archdiocese actually supporting this issue and telling their voters vote yes on Amendment A. That led to other things such as certain ads reaching certain audiences, certain ads reaching certain donors. And I always want to remind people to never doubt the powerful potential of just having 10 people who are down with you. And that's something that I'll always just stand 10 toes on.
Can you tell us also, Clarence, how you engage legislators, those people who actually help you put this on the ballot?
Yes. So we had to engage legislators because the way that we put this on the ballot, there are some states that you can just sign a petition and get it put on the ballot, although that costs like $1 million, money that we didn't have as an organization. So the second option was to get it referred to the ballot through the legislature. And because of that, Together Colorado already had really good and tight connections with some of the legislators there, but also through my family's connections with the Colorado Black the Black Legislative Caucus, we had individuals there who were willing to put in a lot of extra work to see that this that the success of this would happen. And what we find is that through those relationships, we were able to negotiate, have a better foothold in negotiating what the language of this thing should look like. Because we didn't want to introduce language that would kind of water down the potential of this idea. We had by having some good and strong allies in the legislature, we were able to put our foot in the door to fight the fiscal note, which would have essentially what some of our opposition wanted to say was, well, this would cost millions and millions of dollars if we were forced to pay inmates X, Y, and Z money. And as a matter of fact, that was one of the reasons why it failed in California. The fiscal note that was attached to the bill was extraordinary, and that's not worth getting into right now. But it goes to show that having a strong ally in the fight could help avoid some of the threats that can nip this at the bud. And so, we would engage through our legislators through, not just through our lobbyists, but through late night conversations about, how do we persuade this legislator to vote for this? How do we persuade this legislator? And we found ourselves talking, negotiating, and having some really strong allies. And
Fantastic. Claim your wins, young man, and share them with others on how to do it. Each one teach one. I appreciate that.
yes, sir. Thank you.
Professor Rob,
Yeah.
Barry Thomas is here, and he want to greet the audience.
All right.
Go ahead, Barry.
But before you go on, tell Barry Hopeful Man. It is a pleasure and honor to have Brother Fareed on, Richard Fareed, or we call him King Fareed. And this brother is a tireless worker when he's at Cal State.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many ways in which he contributed to the building of organization, as what Attorney Allen is talking about, and that led to the strongest Black movement during the era of Dr. Allen and Richard, well, King Rick Fareed, as well as Barry Thomas and Thy Beattie Grayson, and so many people that contribute to a Black conscious movement that still lives today to a certain degree, even though there's some setbacks and lulls, but we laid a foundation. And it wouldn't be, the Black studies would not be there if it wasn't for the many demonstrations and activities of Brother Fareed, as well as Crystal and all those that was a part of that movement. And when you see certain students, when they meet, would meet them, would say, "You must have went to Long Beach State," because they took their consciousness with them and wore it on their sleeve. But we're going to go ahead on. Who's that up in the corner,
That's Gina. That's my
Gina?
cousin Gina.
Gina, you want to make a comment, Gina?
Professor Rod, Barry want to
Okay,
greet the
let Barry.
audience.
Oh, wait,
You go.
Barry wants to greet.
Barry, different. Go with Gina. All right.
Okay, cool. Hey, first of all, I just wanted to reach out to the family on Jama 2, say hello and what's up to everybody.
Gentlemen.
And to say that to my sister, Miss Rose, I'm extremely proud. And those relationships that we all have and that have run deep, and to see how it has evolved from you to your son and his commitment to the community and moving the needle forward for our people is just a gratifying feeling to me. And I feel really proud of him, really, because I was able to put my 3 cent worth in
Yes,
when the
you
young
were.
man was getting ready to go to school at Howard, and Rose called me and said, "No, don't worry about it, sister. I got it with the gimmick," because of the relationships that we got. I said, "I'll take care of whatever he needs," and just to watch how he flourished and grew just made me feel even better for putting that type of time in, because look at the byproduct that produced, and I'm extremely proud of it. So I just wanted to check in with all the fam, Rose, Crystal, Brother Farid, who I talked to earlier today. And I just wanted to say hello to all the fam that's on, and I'll catch up with everybody individually soon.
Oh, don't hang up, Barry, because I just got to say this.
I'm not going
Oh,
nowhere.
okay. Let me tell you, I don't know if you all have ever studied epigenetics and how your experiences get into your DNA and
Yes.
how that DNA is passed on. He is a product of us. Barry, Fareed, Amun-Ra, all of us. Think about what we did. Think about Letitia Harlan's, Ron Settles. Think about what we did and how the seed that was planted in us has grown in him. So I just want you all to know that all of us have to assume the responsibility for what he's become. And when we talk about generational wealth, people always want to talk about money, but it's so much more. Our wealth is in the capacity of our young people. So I just have to say that because, I mean, I am tremendously proud because I gave birth. But I am so thankful for all of you, my brother Ralph, who's on, my Nani, all of you, Omar, who continue to just embrace and encourage him while he's here in Denver. All of you are responsible for what he has become. So.
Excellent. All of us came of age during those collegiate years where we start developing personal philosophy, national philosophy, international philosophy, a different perspective on the world around us. And some of the phrasing we used was reimagining the world in our own interests and images. And that was an incredible growth spurt for me personally. But I like to think that all of us came of age during that window because of all the fantastic things that we were involved in. And all of the courage that we displayed and showed by trudging in that path. So Attorney Allen, I want to say to some extent I consider you a nephew because we're part of that birthing of your mom. So if I call you nephew, you understand where it comes from, the DNA there.
Hey, yes, sir. And I'm honored to be your nephew, man. I'm honored to really have been raised by y'all in this fight, and just in this life. That not only have I been raised to follow in your footsteps in this struggle, but to also follow in your footsteps as people. That y'all have just been my mentors, really. And y'all have loved me into existence. Y'all have loved my possibilities into existence, and I'm forever thankful for that.
Okay.
Excellent.
All right. We're gonna go with Gina and then Ralph. Gina, you there?
I'm here. I'm in the middle of kind of another meeting as well. I'm doing two things at once. I'm so honored to be here, though. Let me put on this camera. Well, hello to everybody.
Hey.
Cousin.
Hey.
Where's my nephew?
Hey, I'm
Hey,
right
how you
here.
doing?
I'm
So proud of
just
you. We're
here.
proud of you out here in California. I
Thank
have your Uncle Raymond in the background. We love you so much. We're so proud. I know we don't see you or talk to you as much as probably everybody else on here, but we are. I haven't seen you since we ran into each other in New Orleans.
Oh, man.
It was 1 billion people, and we saw each other.
We
And
sure
since
did.
then, you've just grown into such a fine man, even then, and just remarkable. So we're all proud. I know you're making your mom proud and your dad proud. What a legacy. And so to everybody, we want to say it's Uncle Raymond. He's saying
Hey.
hey. He's saying hey
Hey
too. We
there.
love you guys.
Yeah.
And to Amun-Ra, everybody. Who else is a Crystal? And I
Barry
know my
is
cousin
on.
Ralph is on here. Who else?
Hello,
Barry.
hello. I gotta say that Gina is also a CSUL alum, and she's an amazing teacher. And Ross, she worked with your son.
Yes, I was over at Drew Middle School when he was next door. He had his school next door, so we would talk all the time. Yes.
All right, good.
And yeah, it was because of Long Beach State, actually. Really, Dr. Sensalo, I ran into him at Trader Joe's one day. Rose and I took a picture and sent it to Rose. We ran into each other, and so thank you to all. I remember Rose, I was scrambling. I said, "Where am I going to go to school?" And so she hooked me up with everybody. She was hooked up.
That's
She
it.
introduced me around.
Yeah.
And anyway, I thank you all. I'm just honored to be here.
You're
Yeah,
so good to see you.
those days we had juice. We can get person in
Yes, we
school
could.
even if they was on a gurney and on life
Right.
support. We got them.
We could get them into school.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think Ralph, did
And
you
I'm
have a
still
son,
here. I mean,
brother Ralph? Are you still in Denver, Ralph?
you're on mute, Ralph.
Okay, great.
Are you still in Denver?
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Are you
Okay,
still
great.
in Denver?
Yeah. I
Good,
just wanted to
good.
say that I'm so very proud of Clarence, and to be a part of a slight part of his organization, and watching it grow from the first time that it was shot down in Colorado, and finally they were the first state. And then I watched as we watched Louisiana shoot it down. You know, that was really one of the first hardest blows. And then the great achievement when we had what first it was when we had the elections and we got 10 more states, you know. And that was amazing, you know, to see that all of his hard work went into that, you know. And for me to even be right there with them, you know, and some of it, watching it grow, and to meet a lot of the colleagues that helped assist with that too. And someone else was talking about his influence on people, on the young people. You know, I know for a fact that he's influenced a lot of his cousins. You know, they are really influenced by it, by him, and even me. You know, he influenced me. You know, right now, by me getting back in school. You know, sitting right there with him, and he went back to school. You know, that influenced me to jump back and get and go for my master's. You know, and then even Clarence passed the baton with me, with the organization that he started that I'm spearheading right now, is the Directors, Owners, and Teachers of Color. You know, I'm so proud that he started that, and right now that is that we're still growing with that, you know, and that is by him influencing me as an organizer, that I was able to follow his lead and take on that responsibility, and that organization is picking up pretty good. Yeah, and I just wanted to say how proud I am of him, and how much he's influencing a vast amount of people.
Good.
Oh man, Uncle Ralph, I really appreciate that. And you know, for those who don't know, Uncle Ralph and I lived together during the pandemic, and that was around the time that you know, we launched that Abolish Slavery National Network organization. So Uncle Ralph was someone that I was confiding in. He would give me his wisdom, his advice. He was there during all the abolish slavery drama and victories, and you know that it's as much his organization too, that we were there together. So I man, I really appreciate you.
Thank you. And I really feel like I'm a big
All right, good. Rashid, do you have any comment?
Oh, I'm just I take my hat off to Rose and Marie, raising an excellent son and everybody else that played a part in his life. This is exactly what we want here at Community Education Network to help us spread this great information that we have people that are younger than us that's carrying on all of what you guys build. So I'm elated and Brother Kamal, this platform is yours just like it's ours. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I have a question. May
Yeah.
I, Clarence, when you were being sworn in,
Oh, okay.
I took a picture. I captured a picture of you with your hand raised and tears flowing. And later, I asked what came up for you. Can you share with us
Yeah.
that emotion and what's next?
Man, there were quite a few emotions I was feeling. Just on the on one hand, I was thinking about the amount of work that I put in to get through law school and to all that studying. I cannot tell you how many pages I have read, how hard my brain had to work overtime to get through law school. But then the other feelings I had was gratitude that I couldn't have gone to law school without, of course, the immediate support of my parents, but also just the number of people who have prayed for me. All the people who've prayed for me. That there's a quote that just really sticks in my head, that says, "Your grandmother's prayers are still covering you to this day." And I thought about how many prayers are still covering me, from my parents praying that my mom's pregnancy with me would be successful, praying that because I was born premature, so praying that I would grow up and be strong and healthy. To the church members praying, every time that I got sick, every time that, I don't know, just feeling the love and the uplift of my community was how I got to law school. And I thought to myself, that this is, that of course my story doesn't represent the end of what our ancestors had prayed for, because our ancestors had always prayed for liberation as well. But I just, in that moment, I kept thinking, like, wow, a few generations ago, we were in Jim Crow in the South. And a few generations before that, we were property. And now here I am standing before a state Supreme Court judge, getting sworn in with all the duties and responsibilities of transforming the law. And I just I was hoping, that my ancestors are smiling down on me in this moment, and that I want to make them proud, and I want to carry that heavy mantle the best that I can. And so that's those are all the thoughts and feelings going through my head, and it just flowed out like water.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. Judy, do you have a
Profound. That was beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Judy, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Hi. Hello from Inglewood, California. First of all, I want to start with Rose. I met Rose through Crystal many years ago. And so I kind of butted it into that relationship. And Rose and I developed our own friendship and sisterhood through the years. Rose was pregnant with Clarence. I was pregnant with my son Christian, and she was on her way to Denver. And So I had an opportunity. I knew you, Clarence, before you were who you are today, and I've watched you grow and how proud, first of all, your mom is. I'm proud of her as well. I know this is about you, but just the things that she's accomplished through her life, but also how just to watch you grow and be such an amazing, amazing young man. I had a seat to that, and I really appreciate that. And so, and I love you like you were one of my kids, because we are all close and very our families are really close. But I'm just proud of you. You've persevered through some sicknesses. I recall some challenges you had with your health when you were in high school. Some of the things that were going on. And once again, prayer. God is so good. He brings us out so many times. But I just want to say I love you. I'm still watching from afar. You have so many people rooting for you and your future, and just can't wait to be able to see what God has in store for you, because I just see so many big things for you as well. So I just want to say that I love you. I'm so proud of you. And Rose, you did an amazing job with Clarence in Denver, of all places.
I
Let's start with that. Let's start with
Thank
that.
you, thank you,
And
thank you.
kept it real all the way, even in Denver, where I'm sure an environment that's a lot different, obviously, from somewhere like Los Angeles and everything. So you're amazing, young man. I'm just very, very proud of you. Love you very much.
Hey, I appreciate that. I love you too.
Thank you. Hey, Randy. Thank you so much, Judy.
You're welcome.
Clarence, I just want to make a few comments. First of all, I want to thank you for that pursuit of abolishing slavery. I don't think some people who don't know how serious that struggle is, some people just let people go to jail and just throw it away. But some people think mass incarceration just started.
No,
But
that's right.
started, it, that's how, right after the liberation movement of the enslaved, that's how they put them back in slavery, by arresting them. And
Right.
that mass. And they sometimes sold them out to other farmers and sold them out to various companies that contributed to the building of this country as prisoners, unjust prisoners. Because they could arrest a brother if he didn't have a job. They could arrest a brother, they called it a vagrancy law. And there was all kind of ways in which, way before they had cars, way before they had automation and the drug movement so far, And so this issue is a very critical issue that you're taking upon. And we need to get that word out, because the abolishment of slavery need and for those incarcerated, because so many of us are incarcerated today, is very critical. They haven't fighting fires, they haven't doing all kind of stuff and not paying our brothers and then working them and still won't give them parole or probation. Or when they got out, couldn't even vote and couldn't even be a part of the system. And so I think that this is a critical subject matter, and you're welcome to come back and elaborate on the challenges and educate other people that may come on or that we can teach. Second, your Ferguson movement, it transformed Ferguson. You got elected a black mayor, you elected a black congresswoman, y'all, all of that led was because of the struggle. They focused on the Europeans wanted to demonize us and act like it was just violence, people burning down and stuff. But the aftermath, just like the aftermath of the Watts Rebellion, you wouldn't have a Martin Luther King Hospital.
That's
You
right.
wouldn't have a Drew Medical University. You wouldn't have Watts Labor Community Action Committee. You wouldn't have the War on Poverty movement. You wouldn't have the 65 voting rights bill if it don't be for our struggle and our consciousness, and for you to be a young man to see the importance of that movement of dealing with incarceration. It's just like what they're doing to the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here they are, they're giving them 3 and 4 hostages, and they're releasing 250 people that were just detained. No trial, no nothing. You understand? Why did you have them? You know, to release. Those questions will come out in your pursuit. And I just want you to write down your information and publish that book, you know, on the abolishment of enslavement. And we got to use all the tools in our ability to do that. And the second thing is to continue to maintain your character and be a strong brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I tell my son, don't let the world change you. You change the world.
That's
let
right.
them want to be like you. You make the world want to be like you. You're an inspiration and a role model for other young men to emulate. We need better fathers. We need better husbands. Men that are raised to get married. You understand? Not to do no freckled white girl.
Oh, no.
Freckles and all that.
To
a sister. To a sister. Mm-hmm. Our sisters are dying for good men.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yes.
A man with faith and a man with values and virtues. And you represent that. You understand? And as you move through life, others learn from you. Just like what Ralph said, he learned a lot from you, and he's the oldest. You understand?
Oh, yeah.
Other young people will learn from you. To go and get a law degree is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a Juris Doctorate is not easy.
Right.
You understand? Passing the bar is not easy. They make it difficult because they don't want us to achieve that. Thurgood Marshall was an attorney. Being that off, the attorney Ben is an attorney. You know, Doug Higginbotham was an attorney. We have so many great black people that were attorneys because they turned that law around.
Mm-hmm.
Turned the law around. As they learned it, they learned how to use it for our liberation. So we just want to say, you know, you are forever in the archives of the Community Education Network, and we extend to you open invitation. And if ever you need to get on to educate people and discuss issues, no matter what the topic is, we know it's going to be about the movement from an Afrocentric perspective. And I want to say to your mom, none as her friends got on and testified to their love for her. Because the more love you give, the more love you receive.
That's right.
Well, your mom was the most sensitive and caring student that went to Cal State Long. Caring for our people and caring for her family and your sister, Jessie B, named after her grandmama.
That's right.
You understand? Ralph knows the struggles over there. Y'all came from humble beginnings.
Yes, we did.
Humble
and, you know,
beginning.
Yeah.
And, humble and beginning colony. Right across from the Coliseum. You
right.
know what I'm saying? I mean, the sports arena.
Yeah.
Right over there off of Santa Barbara, but now it's Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Yeah.
You understand? Hardball City. Hardball.
Hey, Professor,
they did not pitch underhand. Yeah.
Who's that?
Listen, he forgot to say when he was talking about me that I was coming into his class looking like a deer in the headlights. And one day after class, he pulled me aside and took me over to Rose and said, Rosemarie, This is Crystal. Take care of her.
Well, you know,
That's how I met Rose. Rob told Rose, take care of her because I was lost.
that is something. That is something. That's true. And it's been almost 50 years, y'all. Nani, are you still on? Talk about humble beginnings. Nani was there since I was a child. And
Yes.
if she's talking, if you're talking, you're muted. Maybe she's not on right now. But thank you for that. You're absolutely right. You know, I tell
Yeah,
people,
she took care of me. She
yeah.
watched out for me.
Okay,
That's how
I
I got involved
was
in anything.
unmuted.
Okay, there's Nani. Thank you. You're right, Crystal.
But praise the Lord. This is just so awesome. It's a blessing hearing each and every person that's on this line, and the facilitator. He's wonderful. I've never heard of you before, but now I know you. But Rose is my niece. And we won't go into that. And her son is my, and Don's son is my grandson because I just adopted him. I'm
Yes,
so
ma'am.
proud of you, sweetheart. I love you so much. I hate to leave, but I have another meeting that I'm late to. I let him know I was coming, but everything has been wonderful. The questions and the answers. It's only one thing that I am asking. If all of you would put this forth and pray about it, is reaching the elementary students with this type of information so that they can grow up and know the truth and can make informed decisions. My 10-year-old great grandson, he was 9 when the elections took place last year. And he was so upset because of the outcome. And he was so upset about the killings and the ugliness that had went on. And he was I was saying, well, why, what do you know about the president-to-be? And he said, oh, we talk about them at school all the time. And so we debate and we I said, well, oh, excuse me. So with hearing all of this, I'm asking that if you can catch them before they get to the college campus and sometimes be tainted. So that's the only thing that I just wish I knew how to get involved with people because these kids, talking about these small ones, they really are interested in what's going on. And just one more thing, and then I'm through. He was so upset. He said him and his friends, they were praying because of the people who are having to go without jobs, without money, and without food. And he said, and Granny, you know we need our medical care. Like he goes to the doctor. But anyway.
Miss Robinson,
Yes.
we want him on our show.
Okay.
Wow.
So
I will
let's
get.
make that happen because I have my grandson and I have my granddaughter on, and we want more young people to come on.
That would be amazing.
Let me just make
They
this
would
comment.
enjoy it.
Let me just make this comment. The election tonight, the Democrats swept.
Didn't
You
we?
got Madani, the new mayor of New York. You got,
What?
yeah, you got Spanberger, the lady, she's the first black woman.
Hey, you got me going straight to Twitter right now.
Governor of Virginia.
Democrats
You
have their
got the other
governorship of
lady,
Virginia
Stewart.
and New Jersey.
Oh, you got the
What?
Virginia
And it looks like we're going to
Governor
get
of New
Prop 50
Jersey.
by.
What?
You got, how about
Oh my
California?
goodness.
How
Did
about
Prop 50
California
pass?
districting? You got the brother Jones who they thought
It's pretty
the polls
strong,
closed
Rose.
in about 30 minutes or less.
Okay.
Prop 50's been pretty strong, even though everyone has not voted.
Oh, great, great.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. Wow.
That is
That
amazing.
may in fact be
It's
a
a
real
very strong
referendum on the
message.
midterms.
Jones,
Yes, it's a strong
the
message.
city
It's strong
attorney.
amazing.
You got Jones, the city attorney of, I mean, the attorney general for Virginia. And you have, they thought he was going to lose because he's a brother. that wrote some that you know, back in his childhood something found some hateful writing, they say. But anytime you criticize genocide, they think you're anti-Semitic. So
oh,
you,
yeah. Right.
But anyway, it's clean sweep for the Democrats in all elections, and number 50 is passing overwhelmingly.
And oh, so, my God.
Wow.
So,
wow.
So that was just it. I just thought I'd share that with you because y'all was on. And I
know hey, congrats, you. California.
Yeah. So we're just moving forward.
And yes, we are.
Let me just say that again, Kamal, you have an extended invitation. In fact, all of you, if you see a topic that you would like to talk about, you can get my number from Rose, get it from Kamal. Brother Ralph, you have your hand up.
Yes. Yeah. I would really like to hear more on Sudan.
Oh, yeah. The genocide in Sudan. Who was providing them drones? Who was giving them weapons and things? All of that. It's a genocide going on. But behind that genocide, they like to blame black people on doing it. But there's a white hand behind it. They want some resources. And, you know, Africans don't have no drones. Somebody had to get it. You know, yeah. Remember when they went over in Israel, they had to fly like a kite. You know, they didn't have no drones and stuff and the weapons and bullets, but they won't give them food. Or guns and stuff. So anyway, we've been through this, and thanks for bringing that up, Brother Ralph. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
Ralph, yeah, that's just a beautiful thing. But we respect y'all time in Denver. We know it's late, and Rose, no telling, she may be getting on a plane in the morning. You know? And so,
but I'll tell you what, you all know I just came back from Spain.
Okay.
Terrence asked a critical question that I want to come on the show and talk about. He asked, "How did the Moors lose Spain?"
Okay.
Which caused me to research why and how, and there's some lessons for us from where we are today.
Yes.
There's some serious lessons that we can learn to ensure our liberation for tomorrow. So I want to come on and talk about that one of these days.
Yeah, whatever day you want.
Okay.
You got it.
All
you
right. For that.
If you can't do it on a Tuesday on my show, we got a Wednesday show. And if you can't do it on Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll make a day for you.
All right.
I love that.
All
Can
right.
we end on a funny note, guys? I want to share something funny with you about Clarence Kamau.
All right.
It's just a little chuckle as we end. When he was about, he had to be 5 years old. And we were at a celebration for his sister, for Jasmine. And Clarence and his cousins were sharing a toy. This let me know that day who Clarence was going to be when he grew up. So they're playing with the toy. It was Clarence's turn, but they decided to hand out cake. So Clarence laid the toy down and got his piece of cake. And I'm sitting at the table with the children to eat my cake too. And his cousin comes up with his dad. And he's crying. He's about 5'2". He wants the toy. And so Clarence took a bite of cake, and he swallowed it. And then he said, "Well, it's my turn." Mm-hmm. And then his cousin is like, "But I want it. I want it." And Clarence took another bite of cake, and he looked at his cousin after he swallowed that bite, and he said, "I understand you want it. But if you take it, then I'll be sad." And who should be sad? Me or you? And then Clarence proceeded to eat his cake.
That cake must have been good, too.
Yeah. Okay, listen. We respect your time, Clarence. We respect you being here. Again, you have an invitation all the time. And as we say in Kawaita, the grains of sand are very few on the ocean floor in comparison to the many thanks we have for your presentation. Brother Rashiki, take us home.
Okay. We don't have a show tomorrow. We're moving it to Monday. And our guest is Nazir Anabwale. And it's the topic is Racist Trap at Lakewood High. So that's what we have on Monday. So we have three shows next week.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show. I love y'all.
All right. So good to see the
community. Thank you, too. Thank you, family.
Can I just say one last thing?
Yes, free.
Brother Kamal, given that I'm learning more about you now and I'm excited more about you now, I am going to claim you and lift you up every time I hear about your achievements and your exploits.
Thank you.
So we look forward to you continuing to grow in the lane and the path that you've chosen for yourself, that perhaps your parents have laid out for you, and continue to excel in that space. I mean, when we talk about the various people that have come before you that have made a real impact, we'd like for you to be part of that. We'd like you to be able to put you in the same sentences with Judge Ketanji Brown, with Thurgood Marshall, and dare I say, Attorney Kabu. We'd like to have that come about, to be one of our champions. So thank you for that. And lastly, there's been no better leader and North Star to the biggest, the best, the most productive Black student union than Professor Amon Ra.
That's right.
He'll always be a life mentor.
You must
always.
You must
make no mistake.
I have one last question. Miss Rose Marie Allen, and Kamu is your son?
Kamal's my son, yes.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I was trying to guess that.
Yes,
all right. All right, then, y'all. Good night, y'all.
I love everybody.
Enjoy your
good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. Tutarnar.
Tutarnar.
All right.